I've mentioned audio description on movies and TV shows on more than a few occasions right here on this podcast. And in today's episode of the I Can't See You podcast, I'm going to be talking to a leading Hollywood voiceover artist all about audio description.
From Studio C, welcome to the I Can't See You podcast with David. He can't see, but he's got a lot to say and a face for radio.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 71 of the I Can't See You podcast. My name is David, at David Benj on all the socials. And have a look at my Instagram feed, because I've taken a couple of nice pictures while we've been out and about. So let me know what you think of those. It's always funny when you see a guy that can't see taking some photos, and always like to get feedback on them. Of course, it's always the camera, or in this case, my iPhone, that does all the work. I'm just kind of aiming and hoping for the best. I've got a really exciting show for you today, and before we get to our guest, I do want to give you an update on a few weeks ago. I did a podcast about email and how they come in, and they are mostly graphics, and I didn't realize how many of them came in until all the COVID-19 emails went out from various businesses, and most of them I couldn't read. Some of them I could, but some of them I couldn't. I've started to take some action and actually email the companies and saying, hey, look, you know, these are graphics. Here's an easy fix. Just put the alt text in and you can basically copy the text that's in the graphic and put it in the alt text. And now a blind or visually impaired person who uses a screen reader can read the email, or in this case, in my case, listen to an email. Well, I'd sent an email to a restaurant chain called Honeygrow last week when I received an email from them that basically what I could read was something that said table one, column two, or something like that at the top. And then the next thing that I could read were the different social icons all the way down at the bottom of the email. And that was it. And, you know, I emailed them and I said, look, you know, this isn't accessible. Here's an easy fix. You can do one of two things. You could, you know, use the alt text, which you already have the text there in the graphic. You can simply, before you plop it into the graphic, copy it, put it into the alt text, or put it on a, in a text file somewhere. And then once you have the email all ready to go, just plop in the text in the alt tag. And now anybody that uses a screen reader will be able to know what that email says. And, and Honeygrow, like I said, is a small chain in the based in Philadelphia. I know they have locations in New York and I believe up in the Northeast a little bit and out in some other states. It is a restaurant that Liz loves. And when we're not, you know, in lockdown and not able to cross over the Pennsylvania-Delaware line, Delaware is only about, it's only around 8 or 10 miles from where I'm sitting talking to you. There's one in northern Delaware in Wilmington, or North Wilmington, I guess, that we go to usually on a weekly basis when we're not locked down and not able to cross the border, if you will. We go to Honeygrow, and it's basically they have salads and noodle bowls and things like that. It's, you know, quick serve. You order on a monitor that now I'm I think everybody will be hesitant to touch because of the coronavirus. But it's a very easy thing. You know, with us, we order the same thing every time we go. So it's, you know, I'm sure we could do it via the app and just go and pick it up and eat it at the table there. And they do have dine-in, so that's we've never gotten it to go. But because of how hot it comes when you get it, I kind of think the noodles would be overdone by the time we would get it home. Because again, it's close, but not that close. But kudos to Honeygrow for taking my email and within a day writing me back saying, hey, we just sent out an email. It's got the alt tags in it, and we'll do this going forward. So Joseph A. Bank, P.F. Chang's, Uno, Bertucci's, and all you other folks, Lucky Brand, all you other folks, I'll be writing to you shortly to try and get you to do the changes as well. And there's others. I mean, I don't mean to, they're just the ones that were on the top of my head. I will be sending you a message. Again, it's an easy fix. You know, it's not something difficult. It's, you know, just taking the text that's in the email and plopping it in the alt tag. you know, and it's not something you really need a designer to do. It's done. I mean, you already have the words written. Just have the person who's coding the email plop it in. So I really appreciated Honeygrow. So if you're near a Honeygrow, especially if you're not locked down or you can get it for curbside pickup, wherever you may be located, again, we love it. We always get the, my order is a little bit different from Liz. She gets chicken, I get shrimp. It's called spicy garlic something or other, and it is delicious. And again, Liz loves it, and I wouldn't, only the coronavirus has stopped us from going over the last 5 or 6 weeks. So again, Honeygrow, really appreciate it. And you other folks that I mentioned and anybody else that sends me emails that I can't read, I'll be getting in touch with you shortly. Not a threat, I'm just saying. I mean, it's, you know, you're leaving 30 million people or so on the table by not marketing to them. I mean, don't you want my money? I want to give it to you. And if you have something to sell me, I want to know about it. Yeah, I probably wanted to know about those things that you were talking about when you were talking about your COVID-19 preparation and what you're doing about it. But, you know, I also want to know when something's on sale or you've got some new dish or some new product. So, I mean, why would you want to leave anybody out? So I'll be contacting you if you are a business, mostly large businesses, because the small businesses usually seem to send out emails that I could read. And now to the exciting part of the show, where today we are welcoming in a leading Hollywood voiceover artist. You might have heard him in films like 1917 and Get Out. He's done TV shows like NCIS and Criminal Minds, and one that I loved and is no longer on TV called Lethal Weapon on Fox. One of my favorites. Liz's too. Please welcome to the I Can't See You podcast, Roy Samuelson. Roy, I really appreciate you being here today.
It's great to be here, David. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And could you explain, besides voiceovers, obviously people know a voiceover person does TV commercials, does the audio portion of, let's say, I know you do Toyota and some other ads and things for local radio stations there in Los Angeles. But when you talk about descriptive services, can you talk about what that is?
Oh, sure. So audio description is a audio track that lives with the TV or film that provides access to the visuals for blind and low vision audiences. You can kind of think about it like a sports announcer on a radio given the play-by-play of what's happening on the field.
Right. And, you know, when you mentioned that, I think back to, I love hockey. And I think back to, you know, as I mentioned before we started, you know, I don't see much, but one thing I see a lot of is glare. And obviously watching hockey with the glare from the ice and, you know, everything else, it's just uncomfortable for me to watch. And as well as the announcers aren't really talking about much when you're watching on TV. They may be talking about stories from, you know, when the color commentator was in, you know, playing or whatnot. But, you know, when you listen to the guy on the radio and you hear exactly what's happening, you know, to me, I can really follow it that way. And that's, as I've tried to explain to friends who have asked, what, you know, what is descriptive audio? What does that mean? And you know, it's just a way for us to be able to follow the action when, you know, I'm not watching TV with my wife or either of my kids and they're not telling me what's going on or telling me what the subtitles say. And it has just been so useful to folks like me who can't see what's going on necessarily, especially in shows that I liked an English show that was on, I think it was on Netflix back in the fall or last spring, called Bodyguard or The Bodyguard. And there were so many long pauses without any kind of dialogue that if I had to watch without descriptive audio, I would have no idea what's going on. I mean, for minutes where, you know, the guy's looking at a bullet and contemplating, you know, shooting someone or shooting himself. And yes. Again, without it, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a great example that it is a visual medium, but what we're talking about here is access that, you know, sighted people get to experience the show and talk about it to their friends. and share the experience. It's a cultural, popular experience. And what we're talking about here is, you know, for your experience with the bodyguard, you're with audio description, you can be a part of that conversation too, and be able to experience the emotional nuance that the intent of the show is. It's pretty neat to see how this, you know, obviously I focus on the technical and the professional and the quality side, specifically on the narration side. But one of the things that I'm really learning a lot about from our audiences are what works for them and how they want to have audio description. It sounds like that's syncing up with your experience.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And I've noticed over, I don't know, the last few years of, you know, as more things become available with the audio description, you know, a varying degree of quality. You know, some of the shows on Netflix, I watched Jack Ryan in the fall, and the audio description was outstanding, where, you know, I think it was primarily a woman that was doing the descriptive narration of most things. But when there was a, you know, someone speaking in a foreign language, if it was a guy, there was a man doing the, you know, the translation, you know, of the, you know, that would, normal person would just be reading the subtitles. And when it was a woman was voicing the subtitles. So, you know, to flip side of that, also in the fall, a show on USA called Treadstone, it almost sounded like it was computer generated. It was very, it was very monotone and very, you know, it was descriptive and I knew what was going on, but it was the bare minimum. And do you find that? Do you find that it's kind of all over the map at this point because it's still fairly new?
That's a great question. I think audio description has been around for decades. And the cool thing that's happening, especially in the last few years, whether it's the streaming platforms like Netflix that you mentioned, or Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus, and Amazon Prime, along with even Hulu recently, that the technology is allowing for our blind and low vision audiences, which, by the way, as you know, it's almost 30 million blind and low vision Americans. So this is like a market share of people that have, you know, access to, that want access to this tech, to this entertainment. So, you know, what I'm hearing with you talking about the different inconsistencies in quality of audio description, that the conversation of audio description is changing from simply does it have it or not, to these kinds of nuances. And what I'm noticing, especially when I'm engaging with our audiences, is that they're now distinguishing the writing quality, the narration quality, and even the sound mix quality. That, you know, if you're having to fiddle with volume controls and try to turn up and down the audio description during an explosion or during a more intimate moment, that can take you out of the moment, and that takes you out of the immersion that our sighted audiences have the advantage of. So this kind of nuance gets me really excited. So to address what you're talking about with the synth voice, it's possible that it was a narrator that was reading it very flat. And, you know, some companies do prefer that to try to make sure it doesn't stand out. But the quality of synth voice is getting to the point where it's very conversational. And it's kind of a nuanced experience that I'd love to go deeper into that, but I'll wait for your permission on that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised at the difference. You know, and again, I was just thankful that they had it, you know, for that show. I enjoyed the show. It was a show that I would never get my wife interested in. She just wouldn't want to watch it. And then, you know, and then there's the other times that, you know, we might be watching something together. And when we watch together, obviously we don't have descriptive services on, you know, she tells me what's going on. If I, you know, if I don't know what's going on, I might point to the screen or say, what, you know, what did that say? And of course that also lets me know when she's falling asleep at watching whatever we're watching, when the subtitles come up and I don't hear her tell me what they say, I know that she's out. So it is something that, you know, to me is very important, obviously. And it's, you know, a couple of shows that have been on lately that don't have it, you know, it makes it frustrating to me, especially, especially one on Showtime. I love Homeland, which is ending soon. And you know, my wife has finally gotten into it in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, with Homeland or with anything else, like I mentioned, I have a little bit of sight. So she asked me last week, I was watching the show and she came in and sat down and watching. And she's like, oh, is that guy bad? And it was one of the Afghanis. And I'm like, you know, to me, they all looked the same. They, you know, I could tell they all had a beard and they all wore a hat. So I didn't know who was who. And, you know, I said, I don't know which guy that is. You know, I don't know if he's good or bad. I don't think he's bad, but I don't know. And, you know, so descriptive services would have been awesome on that. Mm. And like you had mentioned, turning things up and down and, you know, to get me to get it on, I have Verizon Fios and I've complained about this, you know, in the past, on a past episode, to get it to actually work on my TV. It is just so brutal. It was a, I don't know how many step process, but for someone that can't see it, you know, it made it that much more difficult. And, you know, meanwhile, there's a closed captioning button, you know, right there on the remote that, you know, you could turn that off and on with, but, you know, for someone who can't see, it would have been nice if the, you know, third button from the left on the lower row was, you know, audio description on, audio description off, it'd be so much easier and nicer. And, you know, it was just an ordeal to get it to even come on, so I could listen to it and then not know if, you know, if the show had the services. And so how do you go? I know you did one of my favorite shows. And in fact, it was a show that my wife and I both watched and both enjoyed. So we didn't get to hear your voice on it. Was Lethal Weapon, was that show that ended after last season, I guess. And so how do you, you know, how do you find out? Does someone call you up and say, hey, you know, we need a voice actor for this? Do you have an agent that does that? How do you go about, you know, getting landing jobs? And do you have any kind of say over, hey, you know, boy, that'd be nice if it had described services on it? You know, how does that all go down?
Oh, great question. I think most of the guiding force has been the audience, that when the audience speaks up, they're getting results. There's a great Facebook page, whether or not your users are on Facebook or not. I think it's accessible. It's called the Audio Description Discussion, and it's run by a guy named Kevin, who has created at least as of my most recent check, close to 400 different audience members who are both blind and low vision, okay, along with a lot of decision makers, some narrators, some writers. And it's a very lively, very positive discussion. And a great example, I'm not sure if it came from this particular group or not, but someone had said, gosh, I really, you know, at the time, Dark Crystal, the series on Netflix had come out. And someone had said, gosh, I really wish the original movie back, you know, in the Dark Crystal movie had audio description. And within 3 weeks, it did.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely the audience. And as more people engage and start sharing, oh, I'd love to have this. There's a whole thread on that group that's talking about Disney Plus and titles that the audience wants. And it's a direct connection and results are happening. So where I'm seeing the changes happening with, I guess let's call it the way things have been and the way things are going, that there are incremental changes. And that gives me a lot of positive hope that these companies are recognizing the value and making it not only easier to access, but also coinciding with the release for sighted people. A great example recently with our pandemic is that some of the theatrical releases were being offered on different streaming platforms for, I don't know, like $20 to rent or to download.
Okay.
And within a week, some of those titles had audio description added. That's unprecedented. And to have that short turnaround time to be able to get access to these audio description tracks, that's because the audience is connecting and saying, we want this, we demand this. Another great resource is the Audio Description Project. If you Google it, you'll get the website. I think it's acb.org/ADP. Again, that's okay. The Audio Description Project. And it's the go-to resource for all the titles, over 4,000 original audio description titles, as well as how to access it. So if somebody's looking for, well, how do I turn on audio description on Netflix if I've got an iPhone? Or how do I turn it on a Apple TV? That's a great resource. But to go back to your original question about how I'm picked, that the current process is that distributor, for example, a streaming service like Netflix or Amazon Prime, they hire a professional company, which in this terms, let's call it a vendor, just to distinguish. The vendor is the one that's in charge of creating the audio description, making sure that the specs are followed. In other words, the streaming service has very specific ways that they want to make sure that this is delivered with the utmost highest quality. And those vendors take those details and they hire a professional writer for the audio description. They hire a professional narrator. Sometimes they hire a director and a engineer, a sound person that makes sure that everything aligns. And some of the companies are also making sure that blind advisors are hired to make sure that the content is correct. And then it gets sent back to the distributor, who then releases it for the audiences. So that's one of many different ways of how things happen. That's just a very boilerplate example of how it could happen.
Okay. No, that's, that's all great information. You know, I was, wondering if it was that deep or if it was, you walk into a studio, they put something on and then you say, oh, this is what's happening now. Or,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think originally it was like there were, the general term was called describers.
Okay.
And those describers were doing the writing, the narration and the delivery, but now it's getting to the level of professionalism where that's being distinguished. I have so much respect for the writers. They are the core of this. And if you follow social media online, there's a lot of people that are speaking up for the writers and the decisive opportunities that they have and decisions they have to make. That, one of the examples I love to share is a picture is worth 1,000 words. And let's talk about a film that's 24 frames a second. 1 second of film, that's 24,000 words that you get to choose from. And then you've got to make sure it fits in between dialogue. So you're not talking over people. So that narrows it down even more. It's a huge responsibility. So I'm a narrator and I like to distinguish myself as the person who's reading those words. That's my contribution. I don't do the writing. And those writers are really unsung heroes in this world.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I was, my wife and daughter and I had gone out for a walk the other day, and about a mile from our house, there's a waterfall, and I, snapped a picture of it, with my phone, and I posted it on Facebook the other day. And I went in to edit the alt text so any of my blind friends could, figure out what I, what I took a picture of. And it said something like, and I described the, there was a creek up to the waterfall and then the waterfalls are about 100 yards in the distance and the grass is green on both sides and the trees are blooming and so forth and so on. And in the distance was, this building. And a message came up and I wasn't sure it was going to let me even post it. The message said, descriptions are usually 100 words or less. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, a picture's worth 1,000 words. That's not even 1/10. And, but no, it's very interesting what you say about the writers. So are you also watching the movie or the show as you're doing the recording? And why don't you take us through a session, how that all goes down?
Well, sure. And again, this is just one of many experiences that each company has their own way of doing things. So this is just a general brushstroke. That I am a sighted narrator and I have a headset that plays the original audio. And I'm also watching a monitor that shows the visuals. I'm given a script that usually has time code cues as well as dialogue cues, maybe the last few words of a sentence that someone says, and possibly even visual or audio cues. For example, a bomb explosion or something that's happening on screen that gives me a trigger to know that my next cue comes up. The advantage with the scripts is that it gives me, okay, so I have 8 seconds to say these two sentences. And they will usually give me a cue that says brisk or fast or what I do my best and as a narrator is make sure that I'm writing the emotional tone of the scene. So if someone is very happy on screen, I'm not just going to throw the line away. I'm going to put my hand to my heart and smile as I say the line. And it's not too much. I don't want to be a armchair quarterback and being like, yes, he ran for the ball. it's like, that'll probably take you out. But at the same time, I don't want to say he ran for the ball. You know, it's like there's a different experience by using those exact same words. Another, if I could go off on the tangent even further, sure. With some of the narration, some of the professional narrators, some of the best experiences I've heard, there's a specific female narrator that comes to mind who really rides that, where I don't even notice that I'm listening to audio description. I'm so immersed in what's happening. And I'm watching I'm a sighted narrator. I'm watching the screen and I'm hearing what's happening on screen and I'm seeing what's happening on screen, and it all blends together in this beautiful, poetic, almost, it enhances everything. And so it's not only for blind and low vision audiences, it's also for sighted people, especially to keep track of different multiple characters or anything. So back to the experience of actually recording it, I really try my best to time the reads to coincide, so that if an audience member who's sighted is experiencing a surprise or a twist or a turn or some sort of unexpected event, that I say that audio description in a way that coincides, so that our blind audiences aren't reacting sooner than the sighted audiences or after. You know, it's like
right.
We want to make sure that everyone's having the same experience at the same time. And again, the great writers really recognize the timing of that. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's, you know, you mentioned that about the female narrator when you were actually also watching the show. We had gone to the movies to see Crazy Rich Asians, and you know, there was a scene where they were at some sort of buffet or something. And there's a scene where they're putting sauce onto, I don't, whatever they were eating. And, you know, in my descriptive services, I hear, you know, so-and-so puts hoisin sauce on whatever they were eating.
Oh.
And I took the earphones off, and I said to my wife, I said, what kind of sauce was that, do you think? She's like, I don't know, soy sauce? I said, no, it was hoisin sauce. She's like, how do you know? And I said, because they just told me. So I thought that was crazy how specific they got, because, you know, obviously, you know, you see sauce, if you just said sauce, it still would have been fine. But I just thought that was interesting that they actually said what kind of sauce it was, and whether it was or not, who knows. But it's interesting that they, you know, that they described it like that. Mm-hmm. And so is this something when you decided, hey, I'm going to go into acting, and did you, is that what led you to the voiceover in itself, doing voiceovers, or did you go to California? I apologize, I don't know where you're from. So, you know, did you just say, hey, this is a job, I'm going to do this? Did you go to college for it? What, you know, take us back to, you know, back at the beginning.
Oh, sure. A lot of my training is in acting and improv and performance, specifically for acting. So okay. That's really the core of all my voiceover experiences, is that acting. In other words, when I'm whether I'm reading something for a commercial, or I'm doing a character for a video game or a TV show, voiceover only, I'm focused on making sure that my intentions are being spoken to whoever I'm talking to. So I want to make sure I'm not just reading words on a page to no one specific. I need to be a performance, even when I'm narrating. Okay. That it's got to be directed to someone. So a lot of the training I got just to get into voiceover itself had to do with the acting. And then once I got into voiceover, there was 100 different opportunities as far as video game performances or animation or straight up commercial copy, or even audiobooks, that each of those have similar things. In other words, I'm speaking into a microphone, but each of them have a different kind of guide to provide that quality and excellence within each realm. So when I found audio description, it combined a lot of the technical things that I loved, specifically with the timing and the emotional nuance, as well as making sure that I am talking to someone. If I'm reading an audio description script, it's usually I've got a sense of what I'm getting into, but there's going to be some surprises that I go through, and I need to make sure that I'm joining the audience in a way that isn't condescending. I want to make sure I'm not reading to the audience in a sing-songy, oh, you poor blind person, let me help you provide access. I think that's insulting. I think there's a way to read the audio description in a way that, in the same way that you're experiencing when someone leans over to you and says, oh, this just happened on screen, that I want to be able to share that experience in a way that doesn't take you out and isn't, I'm not talking down to you. I've got to make sure that my intentions are, I'm speaking to someone that I respect and I care for, and I want to provide this in a way that comes across in a way that I intend. So a lot of the performances that I've done on camera or in theater or even in improv have all kind of led to this.
Okay. Yeah, that's, and I did notice, and I was kind of surprised, and I don't know why, but I did see when I, you know, when Max and I were going back and forth with emails, you know, I did see that you had done video games, and I always thought that, you know, back in the day when, back in a previous life, many, many years ago, 80s and 90s, I owned a video store, and we had video games, and in the township that we were in, we weren't able to carry the adult titles. So, you know, I went the other way and, you know, really brought folks in from around with the video games. And it was something that was very popular. And I often wondered, you know, how, you know, obviously when there's, you know, movie franchises that then go into games, you know, sometimes they do get some of the stars that do some of the voicing, but I wondered how, you know, how that all went down. And, you know, I kind of got an idea of it, you know, going through your IMDb page, and, you know, I saw that you were Raphael in a Ninja Turtle game and stuff like that. And I thought that seems very cool. Is that different? That's more on the acting side, I'm guessing, than doing the, you know, described audio.
It's a little nuanced. Like it's still acting. For the video game stuff, I'm definitely if you think about it on a scale of 1 to 10, I have to be at 11. I need to give full commitment. And I just did an audition today for a video game, and I was screaming that if my neighbors would have heard it, they would have knocked on the door and violated all the COVID-19 restrictions. And cause it's like, you got to commit to it. And what's happening with audio description, according to the audiences that I've heard from, is that, let's say that level 11 for video game performances, and then let's say a level 1 is the Siri voice, that kind of conversational flat, it's 5 o'clock. Would you like to set an alarm? That kind of,
right.
I mean, it's what you hear on the screen reader when you turn on your iPhone voiceover, that it's literally just reading the information with nothing in it.
Right.
I've found that our audience wants the narration for audio description to be around a 4 to 6. So I have to make sure that I'm writing that performance in a way that is giving the nuance of the scene, but also turn that volume down enough so that it's still there, but it's not standing out. Like if you're listening to my audio description and during the viewing, you're like, oh, Roy's doing a great job in audio description, I'm not serving the work. I'm not giving you the experience that you deserve. My hope is that when you hear my audio description afterward, you can say, oh, wow, that audio description is great. You know, you can say whatever you want. You can say, Roy, you remind me of an ex-boyfriend. I can't stand your voice. I'm never going to listen to you again. That's fine. But I hope that while you're in it, that you're fully in it and that you're experiencing what the characters are going through and what their relationships are to each other. And I'm just given that brushstroke that is within that world. And that's where I think our narrators are able to serve the scripts in a way that give you that experience, that you don't notice us. The spotlight's on the story. At least that's the performance goal that I have. So it is acting, but it's a different kind of acting. That's kind of the volume's turned down as far as commitment. I'm still fully committed, but I'm giving it that little nudge, and I have to make sure it stays within that range that works for our audiences.
Right, and that's you know, that's to me is so important with you know, watching a show that, you know, that has the audio services, that you don't want it to be overpowering, and you certainly don't want it stepping on the you know, the dialogue, because you want to hear what's going on as well with the, what did that guy just say? And, and I've had that and I'm guessing it was probably Treadstone. You have to have that, that difference with anything. And you say, turning it down and you were at an 11 doing the video game, today. We watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and the girl that plays Rosa Diaz, she has a very distinctive voice in the show, and we've seen her in other shows where she's completely different, characters, and so her voice is so different. And the other day during Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I guess she and a girl who was on the show that's right before Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they were, Skyping in and talking with one another during the show. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that's what she really sounds like. And all the different versions we've heard of this girl, whether it's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine or the other shows that she's done little cameos in, none of them sounded like that. And I'm thinking, I was just shocked. And I kind of got that too with going to your page and listening to the different things that you've done. You have on your homepage, you've got those different audio samples, and and it's just amazing to me that, back in the day that I wanted to do TV or radio, and, fortunately now, anybody can have a podcast. I'm doing what I want to do. Obviously it's for a lot less money, but at least I'm doing it, and it's something, but I never imagined, like the range that just thinking of the different things, the different commercials, or I don't remember what else I had heard, just the, different tones you use and everything like that. It's, it really is an art form that it's not, like you say, it's not just reading the words on the page and getting the stuff out there.
And I hope that those intentions do come through, that, if I'm trying to present, here's this great opportunity for a new computer, that here's some things that maybe you haven't thought of before, that I'm bringing that intention. And it's like, I have to trust the audience is going to hear that. I kind of feel like I'm beating a dead horse here, but it's so important that these are all parts of performances. Even when the audio description doesn't sound like there's much there, I'm doing my best to bring everything I have that I've learned from performance into that, in a way that hopefully will support your experience. It's really important to me that audience is front and center.
It's just amazing to me. And I have to tell you a funny story that I heard a couple of days ago, when I had listened to you on another podcast. I heard that you do NCIS, and my mother loved NCIS, and I don't know what she did. She died back in December, but every time we would go to visit her, descriptive audio was on. And I don't know how, there was some, to shut it off, you had to go into a menu. My wife had to shut it off. And I always liked it. I'm like, no, leave it on. Let me see what's going on in this show. And she's like, no, I hate it. Turn it off. And I never, she would watch those NCIS marathons on USA or whatever channel they're on. And when I heard that you're the one that did the audio for that, I thought, oh my God, that is hysterical. So I had heard you do that. I thought, I wonder if I ever heard him do described audio, because I knew I watched Lethal Weapon, but I didn't use the audio on that. And, I don't know what else. And then when I heard you on that one podcast, and I thought, oh my God, I've heard him a million times, because for whatever reason, she somehow turned it on. And, and it just made me laugh, because, like I said, she died, 4 or 5 months ago. And, so just something like that, little things like that come up every day, to make you remember, remember things that went on with her. And it's just kind of funny that you were the one. What else, things that are running now on TV? Why don't you tell everyone where folks can hear you and what some of the shows are you're doing now?
Cool. There's a few projects that are still yet to be released, and most of the audiences are finding me and reporting it on the audio description Narrators of America, and that's theadna.org. And it's kind of like a resource for just specifically audio description narrators. So you can do a search for a specific project, or you can do a search for a specific narrator. And it's all audience supplied information, so publicly available information on the different shows that all narrators have been on. So you can kind of use that as a guide for following along to your favorite narrators. I would like to point people in that direction.
Yeah, that would be a great resource. And I'll have that in the show notes as well as the other couple of sites that you mentioned earlier. And where can folks catch up with you, whether it's social, website, wherever you'd like them to go to reach out to you if they have questions or maybe project?
Oh, sure. So I'm on Twitter at Roy Samuelson, all one word. And Instagram is also at Roy Samuelson. For both social media, for all social media, I make sure to include alt text. There's also on Facebook, Roy Samuelson Biz, as in business, B-I-Z, okay. All one word, Roy Samuelson Biz. And those other websites, the Audio Description Project, which is the acb.org site, as well as the Audio Description Discussion on Facebook. Those are great resources for people that still want to learn more about audio description and some of the kind of almost behind the scenes stuff.
Okay. Yeah. And that is all great stuff. And you talk about the alt text. And again, I've been having not an issue. And I'm not the only one, because I'm not the only blind or low vision guy that's getting email. And I never realized how many companies send out email that are all graphic. So even the text that's in there can't be read by, any voiceover. Mm-hmm. And, so I've just started contacting different companies. Hey, you know what? I'd love to read your emails when you have a special. I didn't really notice it until everybody was sending COVID-19, things out about, hey, we're going to be open. Hey, we're going to be closed, whatever. And I'm thinking, I can't read this because it was all in a graphic. And I don't understand why you would do a text. You know, it was basically a logo and then the rest was text. I don't know why you wouldn't just plop a logo in, in an email and then just type it up. And, I got my first company to, I said, look, all that you need to do is add the same thing that's in the text in the alt tags.
Yes.
And I'll be able to know what it says. And it was a local, I'm in the Philadelphia area, local Philly region restaurant chain. And they sent out, I had emailed them a couple of days ago. They said, hey, they contacted me yesterday. We sent our first email out. We added the alt text and see if you have any issues with it. And I went to it and it was great. And so it just made me, there's 8 million other, businesses, big companies. I mean, they're not small, And now I just envision, I hear you, reading the reading the ad to me, it's a picture of food or whatever. I can, I could hear your voice or some other, narrator saying, steaming, blah, 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 looks this and that. So if it could only come to that where everybody knew and everybody, everybody could help us out. It's frustrating. To not be able to, watch a show and know what's going on, or to, open an email and wonder what the special is, or, what the new dish is, or what the new whatever is. And, so the stuff that you're doing is great work. And, we really appreciate it. And you also seem to be an advocate for described audio, which is outstanding.
One of the things that means a lot to me is, going back to your email, and this relates to what you just said, that you shouldn't have to send that email, but because you did, it's that little tiny incremental change. And everyone who does that, again, you shouldn't have to do that, but because you did, it opened up a new way of looking that the businesses might not have considered before. So it is an educational thing. I don't see it as a shaming companies. I know this is, we have such a long road to go, but seeing the good growth that's happening, both specifically in the entertainment industry, the TV and film, and also in companies and social media engagement, that people are starting to pick up on. One of my favorite things was a cited host on a show was saying, oh, alt text, they had never heard of it before. And they're like, it's kind of like conscious posting. I'm like, that's a great way. So now there's like this whole Zen approach that sighted people could use that they're getting something out of it. So everybody wins.
Right. And, right.
You know, my efforts are definitely, you know, let's talk about it. Let's talk about how great it can be and how quality and filled with excellence that it can be, that this is a professional service that we're providing for not only blind and low vision audiences, but for also those who might need a little extra, whether it's, you know, they're cooking and they've got their eyes on something else, or they've just had 16 Zoom calls and they just want some entertainment without staring at another screen. That there's all sorts of different applications for sighted people to enjoy audio description. So there's, and that can only help our blind and low vision audiences by exposure. So it's, right. It's great.
Right. And that's, you know, just touching on that before I let you go, that's, you know, in a couple of groups I'm in, you know, a lot of the discussion is, you know, first it comes out for, you know, the blind and low vision folk. And then at some point it goes mainstream, the voice remote for Comcast that was developed by a blind guy at Comcast that, you know, to help, you know, blind and visually impaired people, you know, put on what they wanted to, without having to go through any kind of menus or whatever. No, now everybody loves it. And I can envision that day where, you know, like you're saying, somebody, you know, my wife loves to have, you know, background noise on. And, you know, if it's something that she's seen before, obviously she knows if it's a movie that, you know, she knows what's going on, even just by hearing some of the dialogue, because she's seen it probably more than a dozen times. Yeah. So, you know, just that extra thing where, you know, you're going for a ride or you're going on a plane and, you know, you won't be able to, you know, you just want to listen, whatever, it'll be there. And hopefully, you know, someday it'll just be as common as closed captioning or some of the other things where, you know, where everybody can sit around and talk about whatever the popular show of the day is and everybody will be included in it.
Yeah. And hopefully blind audiences can continue to be advisors and even narrators. The technology allows for this work to be done by narrators who are blind or low vision, and hopefully they're involved in the creation of this process too. It's important that's another aspect that that's important that we are making sure that the blind and low vision audiences, as well as those in our community, are involved in this work.
Right. And that's definitely would be important for, you know, at least for blind folks to give their input, not just to say that, hey, this is what they must want here. You know, let us tell you, you know, hey, this is good or this is no good or whatever.
Yes.
You know, Roy, I really appreciate your time today. And I thank you for coming to the I Can't See You podcast and have a great day today out there in LA.
Oh, thanks so much. It was great to have all these questions. Thanks again, Dave.
Again, my thanks to Roy for stopping by the I Can't See You podcast today. And all the links that Roy mentioned will be in the show notes. So that will be at icantseeyou.com/071. Remember, I can't see you. It sounds like a whole sentence, but is only 7 letters long. icantseeyou.com/071. And on that page, you'll also see some other links. One especially is for Amazon. If you shop at Amazon, I'd really appreciate if you clicked on one of my links and you would be helping us out by giving us a little commission for any qualifying purchase. I am an affiliate, so any little bit that you purchase there, and it doesn't cost you anything more. So please, if you want to help out the I Can't See You podcast, you can always do it from any web browser, icantseeyou.com/Amazon, and that will take you right there. And if you make a purchase, I'll get a little something there. And again, follow me on social media at David Benj on all the socials, most active on Twitter, but trying to do some more on Instagram, although it's kind of hard when you're inside the house. I can't find too many good things to post from inside, mostly things that Liz makes. And speaking of items that Liz makes, like food, you know, I am down another pound or two from the episode a couple of weeks ago where I talked about trying to get back to around 155. So we'll see how that goes. I'll keep updating you. And finally, if you would, and you want to be part of the show, you have some questions or comments, area code 646-926-6350. Leave a message and you'll become part of an upcoming episode. Again, if you love it, you hate it, you have a question about how blind people do certain things or just about me in general or about things that go on in my life that I may have mentioned, please give a call there, and it will be fun to get you on an upcoming episode. In upcoming episodes, I'm looking to interview some more folks because there's only so much I could talk about being stuck in the house all these times. Next week, I am hoping to have Max Ivey. He is the blind blogger, and I've talked about him before on the podcast. We actually roomed together at PodFest, and that's where we met, although we met online a few weeks before that. So I hope to have him on, and I've reached out to a couple other folks. Hopefully, I will have some episodes upcoming with some more guests. Thanks again for listening to episode 71 of the I Can't See You podcast. I really do appreciate you checking it out. Again, my name is David, at David Benj on all the socials. Be safe and stay well.
Thank you for listening to the I Can't See You podcast. Follow David on Twitter. He is at David Benj.